You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Tim Dietrichs. Tim is an artist who has worked as an actor as well as with set and floral design. We went to undergrad together at the University of Evansville. I've always loved watching him on stage and appreciated his kind spirit. He was generous enough to come on the podcast to talk with me this week about his creative life as well as his experiences with drug addiction and recovery. Addiction is something that many of us in the arts have faced in one way or another. I'm so grateful to Tim for discussing it with me. I hope you enjoy the 134th episode of The Compass. What does that, when I say the dark side, what does that mean to you?
The dark side to me is shutting off completely from everything, from living, from life, from emotion. Mm-hmm. And to be a good artist, you have to be in touch with your emotion. You have to be emotionally accessible. And the times that I've been in the most darkness is when I just shut off completely. And but it's hard because I tend to be someone who wears their emotions on their sleeves and can get quite emotional. I've certainly learned how to control that with age, but the reason I really was excited to talk to you is because you talked about the dark side, and mm-hmm. My thing is I was really, really heavily addicted to drugs for a long time, right? Like 12 solid years, if not like encroaching on like 15.
Yeah.
And I just remember the first time I took crystal meth was my drug of choice. And the first time I took a hit, I just remember my emotions flatlining. And I thought to myself, oh my God, thank God.
Right.
That like I found something that has made me not be completely ruled by my emotions all the time.
Right.
And for a long time, I thought that was my biggest character flaw, was being ruled by my emotions. And now I'm so glad I have them back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't.
When do you remember thinking that about yourself, that being ruled by your emotions was causing you problems or was making you too vulnerable? Or like how young were you when you started being aware of that or thinking that?
In college, I just remember getting by on my charm and not doing what I would just do whatever made me feel good. And if something, I didn't want to do something, I wouldn't do it. And I was good enough at faking it that I could get by with it. And, I'm so happy I had that very patient family, because they always knew that I was very impulsive and all of that. And I'm trying to think. So I went to grad school, right? And then I left grad school.
And where did you go again? I don't remember.
Rutgers.
Hey, Rutgers, that's right.
Yeah, and then I left. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, because it became very clear to me that I didn't want to be an actor, because I was like, I don't have the temperament to do this business. I don't have the temperament.
It's very hard on your emotions.
Yeah. And I am somebody who needs structure. I need to know where my next job is coming from, where my next paycheck is coming from. I like to go home every night and I like to have a 9-to-5 job. And that is what I've come to learn about myself. Mm-hmm. And I learned that very early on. And that, I think, also is why I was always a good actor and a really bad director, because I need that. I need structure. I need somebody to tell me, hey, rein it in, or hey, be bigger in this.
Right. In this, so you can be creative within the format.
Right. Right? And it's
instead
so funny
to create
because,
the format.
Yeah. And we're always told as artists, you know, don't stifle your creativity. Don't put limits on it. But I need somebody to put limits on my creativity, because I've tried to write before and I can't, mm-hmm. I don't have the focus to write, and I become too scatterbrained, and I can go in so many emotional ways that I need someone to pull me in and say, you know, right. This is, you know,
go down this path.
Yeah, exactly. And I was always very strong in comedic acting, and it's mm-hmm. because I always see kind of the absurdity in life. And so, you know, I remember people would ask me, you know, how did you come up with that character? Like, where did that come from? And it, you know, in a very complimentary way, they wrote, you know, and I said, you know, I read a script and I hear the character talking in my head, and all of these things play out, and I could go in so many different directions, and that's why I need, you know, a good director to rein it in. And yeah.
I mean, that's kind of amazing that you figured that out so early.
I did, but then it was like, what do I do now? Because
right, because
you
your
know,
schooling was all in
my schooling.
Acting.
Yeah, it was all in acting, and it was all. You know, you have to really love what you do in order to be successful at this, because you're going to have to put up with all of these things, like, you know, being poor, which I'm fine with being poor, but like being poor and like, you know, being transient. And mm-hmm. and I was just like, I'm not.
And the hard emotional part of yeah. being facing rejection constantly.
Yeah. And it's but it's I love acting. When I'm on stage, I love it. I
right.
don't miss it. Miss it necessarily. I certainly don't miss the business side of it, but I've found a lot of other creative outlets in my life. Like, I fell into event design. I worked with an event designer. Now I work at a floral shop. I run an upscale floral shop, so I'm constantly around, you know, creative designs and all of that. But it's interesting. I've always noticed that I've come to realizations about, like, very personal realizations like that very early on, almost ahead of my time. And then I'm like, well, what do I do now? Like,
right.
Like, when I was in fifth grade, I guess, I was in soccer practice, and my soccer coach took his shirt off, and I was like, oh, I'm gay. I am a homosexual. And I was like, I am gay. And this is the thought that I had. And I was at like a Lutheran school. It was in, you know, came from a very religious...
Did you know what that meant before then? Like, had you...
I knew that... I think at one point it had been talked about, and they're like, this is what homosexuality is. It's bad. And I was like, oh, okay. But it didn't like... I was like... Mmm.
Right.
And then that happened, and I was like, oh, that's what that is. And that's what I am. And I remember thinking, it was such a mature outlook, and I have no idea where it came from. And I'm so thankful to God for it to this day, that I was just like, okay... Everybody around you has a problem with this, but this is very real. It's nothing that like I can control. That was a very
right.
primal feeling that I just had. So that's real and that's there. And if everybody around me has a problem, then I'm just not going to bring it up and probably come out when I go to like college or something. And that's literally exactly what I did. So like, I've
You're very logical in that
yeah,
way.
And I just like in emotional awareness that has been my biggest, it's been the biggest obstacle, as well as like, you know, something that has made me, I don't know what I'm not enunciating this correctly, but it's been my biggest, roadblock as well as my most freeing thing about me, because like I said, all of a sudden I'm like, what do I, well, now that I've come to this conclusion, now what do I, now,
right,
I have to sit around and wait this out. And, but like I said, then I went and I did crystal meth and it was like,
right,
everything stopped. And I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No. And I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, and I've been sober for almost 2 years now from drinking.
Oh, right.
And I found a similar way. It was like, at first you think it's working for you because it's like, oh, I don't feel that anxiety or whatever it is you're trying to stop. And then eventually it stops working for you and you realize, or you don't realize for a long time that it's working against you and it's taking you somewhere worse.
It's, yeah. And it's,
but at first it seems like a cure-all. You're like, oh.
Right. It seems like a cure-all, and it's, you think that you're handling stuff, and you're not handling it. Like, you're putting everything on pause. You're not growing, and it's, it's interesting. I'm sorry. It's funny. I'm finding I'm not being very articulate about
because
I've come to a place now. I've been sober for almost 2 years, and I've put it so much behind me that I don't think about it anymore. And it's interesting because I actually, so I went to rehab because in order to qualify for the halfway house that I lived in for 6 months, mm-hmm. I had to go to rehab because that's what the New York State, that's how you get into the halfway house. And, but I really didn't need to go to rehab. I literally just woke up one day and I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. But I was homeless and dealing drugs at the time. So I went to rehab because I had to, and so I could have a place to live, and then got on my feet, and I'm so much happier. I just became someone that I wasn't. Like, I was stealing from people. It was a very lonely, dark, sad place. And I didn't talk to anyone. I was very isolated. And again, I don't think about it anymore. We were talking earlier, like, I don't know how I got to be 37, because I literally took about a 12-year break, and all of a sudden I'm like,
Where did that time go?
Where did that time go? And you become emotionally stuck in that place.
Yeah. So what have you been appreciating in the last almost 2 years of dealing with those emotions again? Like, what are you finding difficult about it, exciting about it, like kind of rediscovering that part of yourself as a positive thing?
I'm finding out that I really care about people, and they recognize that. And I'm a very happy person, and I just want people to be happy. I want everybody to be happy. and I think that people pick up on that. And I'm not saying that I'm someone that is a fixer, like, oh, I'm gonna fix you, or like, it's not a weird psychological like thing. I by being happy and exuding positivity, people around me want to be as well, and in any way that I can help them be positive is just such a rewarding thing for me. And I've actually gotten to be very religious. I've gone back to church.
Oh, really?
I go to church every Sunday and I sing in the choir. I'm doing the flowers for my church on Easter.
That's so amazing. Sweet.
It is, yeah. And it's just to be surrounded by people who are so happy and for no reason of personal gain, just because they've found inner happiness, and they found their happiness, and all they their entire goal in life is to help people be as happy as they are. And I don't know what's wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Like
I'm sure that having that community is probably really exciting.
And what I was going back to saying, like people go to, this is what I was talking about with the going to rehab and everything. I never went to AA meetings or anything. Well, I did because I had to, but I didn't once I left the halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just so done with the drugs. And it's interesting because I feel like in recovery, there are kind of three types of people. Maybe there are people who really are like, oh my gosh, this is a problem. This has taken over my life and I have to quit because everything around me has fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to rehab for that reason. Then there are people who are really, really a step beyond that, and they want to, they're really dedicated to quitting, and they're like, I'm going to go to meetings every day. This is going to be, you know, this is going to be like a religion for me.
Right. And they need that structure.
Yeah. And then there are people, and I'm so happy that I fall into this category, that are just done. That are just, there's not one part of me that wants to do that drug again. I have no desire to do it. You could put a vat of crystal meth in front of me and I'd be like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't remember anything good about it. I wasn't living at that time. I mean, my brain wasn't developing. I mean,
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. So I do find that AA is brilliantly structured, very much like a religion. You know, it is a religion and it's helped so many people, but I never...
Right.
I did, yeah.
No, and I think now especially, because I went to one AA meeting right at the beginning with a friend of mine, and I'm really glad to know that it's there. Like, I'm really sure. Happy to know that if I'm in a place and I really feel like I need it, or right. if I need to be around other people in that way, it's there.
Right.
But I didn't feel like it was for me, and that there's a lot of other tools out there now, and so it's been kind of great to like listen to podcasts that are about women in recovery and like read memoirs and like find ways to maintain that when I need to. I'm kind of a loner too, so in that way.
Yeah, the whole idea of group therapy was always kind of like weird to me too. Also, here's the other thing. I still drink and I still occasionally smoke weed. So like I don't, total abstinence for me was never something that I...
That wasn't your goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do it excessively at all, but...
So because that feeling for you was so complete, are there things that you rely on to maintain your sobriety from drugs? Or it was really like that black and white that you'd feel like you don't really need to it in your consciousness?
I was like, how did it become... Because I was... I was so excited. I was like, oh yeah, the dark side. I've been there. I'm so excited to talk to Lee about this. And now I'm sitting down to talk to you about it. And I'm like, I don't remember. No, but
there are many different kinds.
I literally don't remember it because it's so far. Yeah, no, it is that black and white for me.
Yeah.
That I just was like, I'm never going to do that. No, there's not been one day that I've stopped myself from doing crystal meth where I've been like, ooh, I really want to do it today. Or like, you know, like no matter how good things get, no matter how bad things get, I'm like... There's no part of it that makes me want to.
And was
that,
were you still acting when that part of your life started?
Or would
that kind of already ended?
Yeah, okay. I was kind of, yeah.
I mean, you don't have to tell me the specifics.
No,
I'm just curious, like, when you were kind of in the artistic field full time.
Yeah. Yes, I was. And oddly enough, got like a favorable review. And on a night that a reviewer came and I was so high out of my mind. I mean, the character...
You are not the only person.
Right, right. And I mean, the character was this very nervous, like nerdy, like theremin expert, like and it was just like, you know, it was like a 10 minute play. And I was so, there wasn't a lot of emotional depth. It was at all. It was like a very, you right. know, style. Math Smart wrote the play actually. And
I was gonna say, I think I saw that.
Yeah, play. Yeah, sure you did. Yeah, and I was very high. And so it worked, and all of that. But gosh, there was just I couldn't imagine that. Well, that was another thing. Is I remember thinking to myself. I when I was using drugs really hard, I said I could stop using drugs long enough to go to an audition, nail it, and get the role. But then
what do I do?
Then what do I do? Then comes, but I didn't do that because I was scared that once the show opened and I got into a rhythm and I was like, oh, I got the show down, you know, then I would be lulled into a false sense of security, and then I would start using again, and that's what scared me, because I was like, I can't imagine being
right
emotionally accessible. Because at Rutgers we studied, it was heavily Meisner based, which is very like, you know, it's very much like from your gut, like your emotional response to things and blah blah blah, and I not blah blah blah, but like like, you know, just that wall that goes up with drugs, or just you emotionally flatline. It was just,
yeah,
I can't, there's no way. No. Mm-hmm. there's no way.
So you have your structure now, you're working at this
flower shop.
Yeah. Tell me about the creative outlet you have there. What's exciting about it to you?
Well, you know what, actually it's not at this job. I'll answer that question, but in relation to the job I had before this, because it was more. But what I like about it now, and that keeps me aware of life around me, is flowers have such a limited lifespan. And it's like, this is what I've learned from working in the flower shop. You can only work so far in advance. You can only stress yourself out so much, because flowers die. And you can't, you know, and so you can't.
What a wonderful life lesson.
It is. It really is. I mean, yeah, it's you can't. And no, also nobody's ever upset to get flowers. Nobody's ever like, this is awful.
Right.
You know, they're like, thank you. And everyone's really happy to see you all the time. And you're just working with like fresh, alive little creatures, and that are around. The fact that there is an industry of flowers is so funny to me. That strikes me every once in a while.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. I'm like, this is a very lucrative industry of people picking flowers from the earth and arranging them and giving them to other people. That is, there's literally an entire industry based around it. There's a wholesale flower market.
And then they disappear.
And there's, yeah, you don't need it to live. You don't need flowers to live. Nobody needs a flower to live. And they are completely useless thing, you know, like it's not for our survival. It is literally just to bring people joy, and like to be able to be around that all the time is like absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's really nice. And then, you know, just simply working with like the dirt and working with leaves and smelling the fragrances, it's really relaxing. But in answer to your question, so before this I worked at a set design shop in Red Hook.
That's right.
And that was, what was your initial question? I'm sorry. It was like,
look, what sort of creative things are you excited about these days with the different things you're doing?
So, you know, great about set design is that it's actually the total opposite of working in the flower shop, because you work for months and months on this project that is up for a 20-minute performance, and you know, and just, but like the world that you're creating in this, for and like the, you know, the awe that you're inspiring from these, from building a, you know, a gigantic bedazzled unicorn for a Nicki Minaj concert, it's like it's absolutely amazing. And you're like, oh, I'm working so hard, but I'm making a bedazzled unicorn. Like, I don't, again, it comes back to just the reason that I loved acting so much and still do is because it is so comforting to me to have someone come into a theater, see my art on stage, and be moved to usually laughter, because I was often in comedic roles, but to have someone have such a strong reaction to something that I've created is the most satisfying thing on earth to me. And whenever I ever had my little dreams of, you know, giving my Oscar speech, you know, in the shower, like practicing your Oscar speech, whenever everyone's done it, don't say you haven't. you know, it was always just like, it was always to come to that level of success where you were winning an Oscar or whatever, to be able to reach that many people, that fan base of so many people who are so touched by your work, and maybe after, you know, a play have a different view on life, or think, oh, maybe I should go call my mother, or, you know, maybe that ridiculous man who lives next door to me isn't so bad, and maybe I should try to be a little nicer to him. Like, that's what I always found so rewarding, especially about comedic acting, is finding the absurdity in people and the world, and making people laugh about it, not because, you know, you're making fun of it, because that's the first thing you learn in acting, is to not judge the character. You can't judge the character, you can't make fun of the character, but right. Like the circumstances and the absurdity is what is so satisfying to bring to light, because I hope that because of me, people will say, you know what, I shouldn't take things so serious, like I shouldn't take life so seriously, like there's just so much, oh god, especially now with Trump, and like I just so much hate and so much,
well, you keep using the word absurdity, and that's what I was thinking,
yeah,
about
exactly. Right. And it's you know, it's funny, I'm like, I just can't find anything redeeming about that guy, but you know, I will say though, I saw an interview of George W. Bush on Jimmy Kimmel, who, you know, I like, you know, and I was like, who I used to be like, oh, that guy's awful. And now I'm like, that guy's awesome. But like, you know, it made me.
His absurdity level seems slightly less extreme now.
Yeah. And he has a really good like sense of humor about himself. But yeah, it's really interesting, actually. They like his administration used to like doctor newspapers to give to him that made him it look like, so he would be reading newspapers that were saying like, oh, hey, you're doing really well in the polls, or like you have a really high opinion of, and so he didn't know, he had no idea that like his public opinion was so low. And Trump is like, apparently by the TV every day, looking at his, you know,
right,
his polls and everything. And it's just like, oh, like there's just,
oh my God.
There. Yeah, I know.
It's, yeah. Too,
sorry. I brought him up.
He who shall not be named.
Yeah.
Do you feel like New York is your home long term?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I tried to move. Well, after grad school, I moved to LA for the worst. It was the worst year of my life. That place, the weather was great. The weather was wonderful.
I've only ever spent like a week at a time, yeah, so I feel like I have no idea.
Yeah, it was. Then again, that's where I started using drugs, so I can't really, you know, that was a whole other thing in and of itself. Mm. But I got hurt really badly. And it was just, yeah. Anyway.
And then you came right back to New York?
Yes, then I came back to New York. Then, like I was saying earlier, when I said I feel like there are three types of people. There are people who know they need to quit using drugs, and they try to. Well, that was me at one point. And so I went home to St. Louis, lived at home when I was 30. Worst mistake of my life. And but I wasn't ready, and I knew in the back of my mind that I wasn't ready to quit using drugs. And both times, when I moved to LA and when I moved to St. Louis, I was like, get me back to New York City now. I also never dreamt of being, I never knew what I wanted to be. I just knew I wanted to live in New York City. Like, always.
Once you decided you didn't want to be an actor anymore.
You know, way back in high school when we came for like my high school drama trip, we came here and I was like, oh, this is where I'm meant to be. I was meant to live here. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'll be an actor. I'm good at that. So then I was like, oh, I'll pursue acting. But
in New York?
I haven't really, yeah, I don't, I'm too scatterbrained to know what, I still don't know what I want to do with my life. I have no idea what I want to, I have no idea what I'm doing with my life.
But you're living in New York City and you're paying your bills.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, that's, I just remember like the first year after I got out of grad school, did a few small things acting wise, but mostly I think my mom had said this to me at one point, and I try to repeat it to myself. Like when I got through the year and I had paid for, you know, paid for my rent and survived all year in New York City, extremely expensive city.
Yeah.
However I did it, even if it wasn't through acting, like that's something to be proud of.
Right.
It's challenging. It's not a small thing.
It's not a small thing at all. It's not a small thing. And you know what's interesting is when I was using drugs and I was really in the thick of it, there was a part of me that was very excited having to survive. Having to survive was such a source of... I had to be so creative. I mean, I had to... Where was I going to sleep that night? I don't know. How was I going to eat? I don't know. And, you know, then that turned from being like a creative game into like desperation. And that's right. When I started, you know, I was in and out of jail and bleh, like it was horrible. And I just, the whole time I was like, I lost touch with all of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I barely talked to my family. I don't speak to one person from that time in my life. That was, it's a solid 12 years of my life. I don't talk to one person from that I met in that time in my life. I just talked to my friends that I knew before I started using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only people I hang out with. Amanda Sykes and these are all people we went to college with. And I mean, that's telling in and of itself. It's just, it was such a lonely time that I've really blocked out of my mind.
Right.
I've completely blocked
out. Probably for the best.
Yeah. I thought this was going to be such an interesting interview. And now I'm like, I don't remember. Like,
it is interesting.
I don't remember any. I don't. And I'm
sure you remember it, but I'm glad that you don't dwell on it.
I don't dwell on it. And I do remember there were times where I'd be walking down the street when, you know, back when I was using drugs, and I was like, maybe one day I'll be one of these people walking to work and coming home from work and going to get food after work and, like, you know,
having doing that New York thing.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll be an adult, like, and I was like, but I'm not right now. And I kept waiting for, like, my life to begin, but I knew that it was all my fault that it wasn't beginning, but I couldn't get out of this rut, and it was just, right. But it's just, the reason I started going to church too is because, I mean, to go from 12 years of crazy drug addiction to literally overnight being like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. My entire life was centered around that drug. I was dealing it. I was doing it. I would wake up if I slept. Like, I would wake up and be like, how can I get this drug? What am I doing? And then overnight was like, this is disgusting. I don't want to do this. This makes me feel like shit. I'm not living any sort of life right now. No quality of life. That doesn't happen, especially with crystal meth. Crystal meth, like, changes the wiring of your brain. It's the one drug that really, like, actually changes the chemical makeup of your, and rewires your brain.
Right.
And that's why it's so dangerous.
And there wasn't anything particular. You would just reach that point where it was too much. There wasn't particular.
I started.
I mean, you don't have to talk about it if you
No, it's okay. I don't know how to put this because I sound a little crazy, but I started seeing things in people that were very dark. Like, I would just know, you know, people have their own rates of speech, the mm-hmm. way they talk, you know, everyone's voice goes a little higher. Sometimes it goes a little lower, but it was exaggerated. And it was almost like, things like that, like these really weird, it wasn't particular experiences, but it was like something was probably changing in your brain,
wiring to an extreme.
Right. And that was scaring me to the point where I stopped using and started getting a lot of sleep, and it was still happening. I can't explain it because, like I said, it wasn't actual experiences, but it was almost like, if you took, you know, those photographs that are double exposed, and it's like, it's kind of like, you know, there's a person and then there's like the blurred image of them moving. Mm-hmm. That's what was happening. It was like something was like a reality was layered over another reality almost. And it sounds like I'm hallucinating from drugs, but I wasn't. If I would have hallucinated from that drug, it would have happened a long time ago. If I was to hallucinate from lack of sleep, it would have happened a long time ago. At that point in my life, I'd had a very good handle on physically what that drug was doing to me.
Right.
I didn't, you know, that wasn't, and some higher force was telling me that I was going down a very dark path, and that I was going into some really weird places that I would not be able to come back from. And it wasn't, nothing happened. I didn't hear voices. I didn't see, you know, demons or anything, right. But there was something off, and it was from the drug, but it wasn't directly physically. It wasn't anything that can be explained in a research laboratory. And, things like I would see, you know, like you go up to a concrete wall and there's, you know, the pattern on it of the concrete, and there's like a face there, right? Like you could sometimes in the pattern you see like a face or
a shape or something.
Yeah, and I would, and I remember my sister was there, and I was like, oh my gosh, look at that. She goes, what? And I pointed it out. She goes, oh my gosh, that's crazy. So I wasn't hallucinating it. It was there. Once I pointed it out, you know, she was like, oh wow, that's so interesting. And I was like, yeah, but I would see it everywhere. And it was like I would see, and I would like walk up and there'd be like, you know, but that's what would pop out at me, not a wall that I walk by every day and see an irregular pattern,
right?
Things like that,
right? You were just on the edge of another
something thing. Yes, I was on the edge of something
after
else,
12 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I again, like, I did a lot, and that at this point, like I said, I stopped using for a long time. I got a lot of sleep, started reading a lot about it. Like, what does it do to your brain physically? Like, what I was like, oh my God, this is happening. I'm starting to go crazy from using this drug too much. Like, I was very much on board that this was this drug making me crazy. And everything I read was completely contrary to it. It was like, it wasn't a symptom, not at all. And it wasn't, you know, it was like, you know, erratic behavior or isolation, all of those things I'd already been through, you know,
right.
All of those things I'd already experienced. And, but like, none of it had to do with, you know, slight, subtle psychological things like that. And so I just one evening walked out of my apartment and I was like, I'm done. And I checked myself into the psych ward at the hospital. And I promise, not crazy. I just didn't know where else to go.
I'm glad you're telling me the steps that you took, because people need to know about resources stuff. You never know what people need.
I walked out of my apartment. I was renting a room in, actually not far from here, in Sunnyside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like above someone's garage that I was barely able to pay rent on. And I didn't know where else to go, but I knew I needed to change my life, and I knew I needed to be somewhere where I wasn't going to do drugs, because I was in such a habit of using them. It wasn't that I wanted to use them. It's just, I knew, okay.
Yeah. They call it a habit.
Right.
For
right. It's like, well, when you're homeless and you're wandering the streets and it's 2 a.m., the only other people who are awake are people who do drugs. Got news for you. And you know, like, everybody else is in bed sleeping. Which I love. I love sleeping so much. And so, you know, so in order for me to get in the habit of not to not be in a life, you need to change.
Yeah, your and so I knew I didn't. Daily.
I knew life. I wasn't going crazy, but I went to a psych ward anyway because I knew that they were going to be able to put me into a rehab facility, which I knew because I knew I just needed to retrain myself to right. live life because I didn't. Right. I needed to get a routine, like I was saying right. earlier. Like I need routine. I need a routine in my life. So like I went to this extreme place. At first, when I started using drugs, it was like, oh, this is I'm so free. What an amazing freedom that I have. Like, I love not having this structure. And then I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I was so scared of, is not having structure. Like, and so, like you said, it's like, at first it becomes the cure. And then all of a sudden it becomes the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and
very sneaky that
way. It's a crazy cycle, right?
Yeah.
And so I knew I just had to get back into the habit. So I went to the psych ward, then I went to rehab, then I went to the halfway house, and then all that. Where was I going with that?
I had asked you, yeah, if there was anything that happened, like an instigating moment when you did finally decide to stop, like, and that's how we got into all the stuff that had changed around that time.
It was a... No, I mean, so what I just explained to you happened to me off on and off for like about 2 months from, I stopped using in August of 2017. My birthday was May 30th. I got out of jail on my birthday after having been in jail for 6 days. And that was an extremely traumatic experience for me. Prison, jail, I guess I was in prison, but like jail, I was in hardcore jail, like downtown. I had the jumpsuit on for 6 days.
Eesh.
And can I tell you something? It is appalling, the prison system in this country. The way that you were treated like subhumans, and the way that the prisoners just are okay with it, and it's for a lot of prisoners has become just like how they live their life, is absolutely,
it's so scary.
It's so scary and it's so sad.
And it's so huge.
It's
huge. In our country, the percentage of people who are imprisoned is insane.
No, and I'm like, how on earth does throwing someone in a cell and telling them, like treating them like subhumans in any way, a rehabilitative, how do you, you,
it's not solving any problems.
None. You throw them into this horrible, horrible, gut-wrenchingly horrible situation for however many months, years, and then all of a sudden you expect them to go out into civilization and be a normal person? No, like, it's unfathomable to me. So that was a very traumatic experience. But that's not what's, and that just marked the beginning of 2 months of some really just something. Somebody was telling me something.
Right.
You know, which is really funny because I'll tell you what, that was on my 36th birthday. And I'd always said from when I started using crystal meth, I was like, you know what? I'm going to use drugs until I'm 35 and then I'm going to quit. And literally on my 36th birthday, like at my 36th year, it was like, oop, you're done. And so that was always really interesting.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So then I had those weird experiences, but no, I was just done. But again, that my story is so unique. That's not how. Right. People are like, right. That's not how it works. And so for me, it just became very clear. In fact, it didn't even really dawn on me until after rehab, when I was in the halfway house for a little bit, I was like, oh, that was much bigger than me. Cause I was like, the fact that I was able to just quit like that is not normal. I didn't really, because once I'd gone through rehab and in the halfway house and listening to everyone around me talk about their experiences, I was like, oh, that wasn't normal. That's not how this works.
And is that around when you started going back to church?
Yeah. And that's when I started going. And then it literally clicked in my head. I was like, oh, God is the only force in this universe that could possibly be responsible for that. Because everything that I'm reading in books, everything that I'm being told, everything that I'm hearing, all of these testimonies are telling me the opposite.
Right.
And so, yeah. And then,
fascinating.
Yeah. And so I went back to church and I've just, you know, and it's so funny because people are like, oh, well, church is how you stay from, you know, using, but it's not, it's just, but like I said, going back to what I said earlier, there's just, it's really amazing to be around people who are so loving for no personal gain, for no personal reason of their own. They're just people who want to share love.
I'm glad you found somewhere that's so positive, because, you know, some expressions of religion can be so bigoted or very narrow in their focus of their love.
Oh, absolutely. No, my brother's a Lutheran pastor, and not the very Orthodox Lutheran. He's, you know, he's a Trump supporter, that mm-hmm. one. Oh, God, is he a Trump supporter? And he, you know, he's rather outspoken. We didn't talk for a solid 7 years because told me that, this is a true story, everyone, that AIDS was cancer sent to Earth by God, like, to kill gay people. And I was
oh my God.
You're fucking kidding me. I was like, I can't believe that we're related. I don't even know where
to believe that it's in the 2000s that you're saying this.
Yeah, I know, right? He also didn't let his first wife have a bank account, her own bank account.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know.
I was going to ask you how your relationship with your family is.
Tell you what, though. No, we're so, I'll tell you when we got to be close again was my father died May 1st of last year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no. Tell you what, that was, my dad's funeral was like the most fun time that I've ever had in my life. We had so much fun. Aww. And my brother and I, we went to the hospital the night that he died. It was like 2 a.m. and then he died. And then my brother and I went back to the house and we're like, we're getting trashed. So we got our dad's best bottle of scotch and just like watched the sunrise and got really drunk and just like totally talked it out. And he was drunk. He's like, Tim, I just want to ask you. He's like, I'm really just honestly trying to understand, like, what is that? How are you? I don't get it. Like, how are you? And so, but he was being very genuine. And I'll tell you what, because his first wife divorced him. She is a bitch, but he's crazy. So it wasn't going to work anyway. But so that ended. And so that was very humbling for him to be able to, like, for
get
a
off
past,
his high horse.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then he married his second wife, who is amazing. And I love her and we all love her. And she's so fantastic. Their first house they had to move out of because it was haunted. And he's like, Tim, he's like, I'm telling you, he's like, and my brother's the last person on earth who would be like, yeah, my house is haunted, you know, like he would try to be like, you know, no, it's, you know, whatever, it's whatever, we're gonna try to pray this away. He's like, Tim, that shit was real. He's like, there's only so many times that you can watch your kids get on the bus and hear very audibly in your right ear, like, a little child saying daddy. And I'm like, oh my
Stop
God.
It.
I know. I was like, oh, that's so terrifying. He's like, oh. He's like, yeah, saw things too. And I was like, that is utterly terrifying. So those things really kind of like those,
brought you together.
Yeah. Those two. So, and those two things really happened in his life and really chilled him out. And he's since apologized and he
good.
And I mean, my sister, my older sister and I are very similar. We're very close. And so we're always just like, Joel, you're so weird. Like, you know, it's just so strange.
I'm glad that you guys are. Yeah.
And his kids are
all
amazing.
In touch.
Like his
in a good place.
Yeah, his daughter's incredible. She's like this whippersnapper, smart. She's like scored in the top 1% in Colorado on like the PSAT, but she took it when she was in like 8th grade. And I'm like, she's like this extremely amazing writer, Leah.
Aww.
She's like this really good writer. Like, it's shocking. I read
it.
I'm
glad she has an uncle like you who's going to be that creative force in her life, you know, to give that other viewpoint.
Yeah, I'm telling her she has to audition for a play.
Well, I know you said that you aren't really a writer. I wish she were, because I feel like You have all these stories.
I
Maybe they'll take a different form.
I do. Yeah. Again, you know, I tried to write something one time. You probably don't remember this. You're probably a little bit younger than I am that you wouldn't remember this. Baby Jessica, who fell down a well.
I know the reference, but I don't really remember when it was happening.
So fascinating story that all this crazy stuff around it. And it was like it was the first event that CNN ever publicized, like, or for like, 24 hours,
right,
the 24
right.
hour coverage of, all this really crazy stuff surrounding it that is just absolutely fascinating. And it was always it was so difficult for me because I was like, it's interesting to take a story that's already happened and try to tell it. Does that make sense?
Like, mm-hmm.
I didn't know what I was trying to say about this.
That's based on a real event, you mean?
Yeah. And I didn't know what I wanted to get out of it or what I wanted people to get out of it. I didn't know what, because there were so many facets of it that I was like, this is so,
like the point
so,
of view.
So fascinating. And yeah.
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 Well, I'm curious. I'm curious to see what you find your next creative outlet.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
I know you had told me at the reunion that you wanted to maybe get back into acting.
I would love to start acting again.
In whatever capacity, whether it's just for fun or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to do it. I'm still getting used to being a normal person.
Yeah.
having a... You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't...
I mean, it's only been almost 2 years.
Yeah, and you don't understand. I was, like, on the streets.
Yeah.
Like, I was a child of the night. And I was, like, you know...
I'm just so glad you're okay.
Thanks. Yeah, me too. And it just... I was talking to our friend Nick Mills. We went out to dinner the other night.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, that's what was so scary. Is like, you were always so happy and such a, like, such a nice, like, person. And he's like, we just didn't understand where... why you got so dark and sad. And I was like, oh, you know, but I would like to say that it is important that if anybody knows somebody who's going through drug addiction or you know, any sort of addiction problem, that it's really important to understand that they are feeling 10 times worse than you are about it. You know, you may see your friend and say, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for them. They're going through this. They know. They know exactly how they're making you feel, and they feel 100 times worse.
Yeah.
And they're beating themselves up 100 times more. And you have to know that.
When you are feeling in like an uninspired kind of dark place these days, are there any things that you turn to, like books that you reread or music you listen to or places you go that can kind of take you back to that positive place that you like to be in?
I don't go to those dark places anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't. And if I do, I reach out to a friend, not about, and I don't even say, oh, hey, I'm feeling, I just say, maybe I'll type them an inside joke. I'll text them,
right.
you know,
just
an inside
connection.
Joke for a long time. Yeah. Or just be like, hey, that's what I do. I say, hey, thinking about you, or hey, inside joke, you know, or like, hey, this is happening in my life too. Because I spent so many years being so isolated and just not having any human connection with anyone. And okay. So with crystal meth, it's a very big, especially in the homosexual community, it's like a sex drug. And
right.
So I had a lot of sex
mm-hmm.
with a lot of people. A lot. It is a miracle. Here's another reason, honestly, Leah, that I also totally invested in God. Because the fact that I didn't have one STD from those days
That's amazing.
Is shocking. It's literally shocking.
Wow.
I mean... the amount of, it's all I did all day, every day, multiple partners. I mean, in the many hundreds, if not, you know, and so, and to think that from those days, what I take away from it is how lonely I was is, you know, there's not one part of me that misses those days and misses that state of mind. Like, not one part of me. I'm so happy every day that I get up to be here and to be living life and
present and healthy,
yeah, and talking to people and going to work with people on the subway and like talking to people, you know, and to reach out and have a text conversation with someone, you know, like, yeah. I don't go to dark places anymore because I'm so grateful for
and your perspective is so extreme too, like, yeah, you have...
And it's, and I'm not as restless as I used to be. I know that always, that comes with age anyway, but you know, I just realized, I think there was an element, you know, with crystal meth, you stay up for days and days, and there was always an element of, I have to stay up later and later because I'm missing something. You know, if I go to sleep, I'm going to miss something. I'm not missing, you know, it's like, it's become very, it became very clear. I'm not missing anything, you know? And
yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
Okay. You're right. And then the last thing is, have you seen anything recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Oh, I haven't really seen much.
Like TV shows or friends stuff or books show. Or whatever.
I do watch a lot of Netflix. I do watch a lot of
I know
Netflix.
There's something.
I really liked Russian Doll.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I loved it.
Yeah. I thought it was really perfect, actually.
Yeah. Our friend Charlie was in Frankie's class at Juilliard, plays the main guy.
Oh, really?
Who has the parallel track with her.
Yes. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
You know what, actually... It's interesting. You know what I was talking about earlier, how when I was going through drugs and it was sort of like things were the same but different? That's kind of what it was like. That's kind of
I think that shows a lot about addiction.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. But it's
but that repetition.
Yeah, how you can go back to a very and it's just slightly off. There's something slightly off. Like I thought they did it. Brilliant job of doing that.
I'm so curious if they do another season, what they're gonna do. I don't know what they would do.
But then the end, when they're all dancing and celebrating down the street, I thought it was flawlessly done. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.